Welcome to Practice Talk, a deep dive into the world of healthcare practices, where we invite team members to share strategies to make your work life easier. Now your host, Lacey Ellis.
Welcome to Practice Talk, brought to you by People in Practice, where we specialize in digital marketing, website development, SEO, and so much more. I'm excited for today's conversation where we will be discussing strategies from a seasoned orthodontic manager with my guest, Tricia. Tricia has always been driven by a clear sense of purpose, deeply inspired by her childhood experiences with her dental hygienist. From an early age, she knew the dental field was where she belonged, even during the challenges of middle school braces. Her passion for the profession led her to graduate from Delta College's dental assisting program in 2009, which marked the beginning of her journey into the dental industry. Tricia began her career as a surgical assistant at an oral maxillofacial surgeon's office, where she spent 8 years honing her skills in a fast-paced, specialized environment. Seeking new challenges, she transitioned into orthodontics, initially joining the team as the treatment coordinator. Over time, she took on the role of office manager, where she had the opportunity to leverage her natural leadership abilities. While she enjoyed patient interactions, she found her true calling in fostering a supportive, high-performing team culture. Welcome, Tricia.
Hi, Lacey. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. Thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I've had worked many years with People in Practice, so happy to do this.
Thank you. So as a reminder to our listeners, don't worry about taking any notes today. We will put together a printable that you will be able to download for free from our website, filled with the details of today's discussion. So Tricia, I know that you've transitioned out of your role as an office manager at this time, so I just want to be upfront about that. However, I was personally able to visit the practice that you were in at the time as an office manager, and I was able to see your skills in action for myself. And so I genuinely want to thank you for taking the time to share your insights, because I know how much you care and how much heart and intention you put into your office management role. And so these insights are just extremely valuable. So thank you.
You're welcome. I wish I would have had access to somebody to lean on as well, just to ask advice and just kind of mentor me. But here we are.
Here we are. So what are some of the most common challenges that you faced in managing a busy orthodontic practice, and how did you handle them?
I feel like a negative person being like, I could list a ton, right? But truly, probably the most challenging thing is not only ortho practice, it's any dental practice, but I would say people calling in, and it's hard. I think that you get to a point where there's the diehards, the people that live the farthest away, they never miss a day, snow, kids, whatever that looks like, they're never sick. And then you have the polar opposites, where there's the habitual, you know, grandma passed away, or kids are sick, or I need to do this. And it's kind of like there's one side or the other. And what's hard is when someone calls in, whatever their reason, and I'm sure they're real, it really can bring down the team, or it gets this stigma on them. And I think, again, that is office-wide, that happens, not specific to ortho. But I would say one of the things that I always try to do is just the minute I have that information, someone's not going to be here for whatever that reason is relaying that information to the team. And that might be a quick message on the way to work, but also having a plan to back that up. This person's not going to be here for a certain reason, and this is what we're going to do. That way they have a couple minutes to, okay, this happened, and still walk in fresh. And if, again, not that you needed to tell everyone in their brother who was not going to be there that day, but at a team huddle right in the middle, this person's not going to be here. This is what we're going to do. Because sometimes when they're not there, or you just kind of are looking for them, people start to panic. Where is this person? Are they here? What are we going to do? So just trying to get ahead of that, I think has been, it really just kind of had people be able to walk in the door and still have their game face on, because they already knew and we already have a plan.
I love that. So I know I've said before on the podcast that there, of all the positions I've worked within orthodontic practices, the two team member positions that I haven't worked in a practice are an office manager and a financial coordinator. Financial for a very distinct reason. My brain does not work that way. But office manager too, it just takes a really special person and, you know, a special skill set for each one of those. And I think the office was very lucky to have you as long as they had you in that office manager role. And this is exactly why, because you see a problem and you don't see it as a problem. You see it as like, okay, what's the workaround? What's the solution? How do we spin this so it's not this explosion of, anxiety that happens right up front? Cause I've been there. I've been the team member who's like, what? So-and-so is not coming. Now we're going to have to cover her column. And then you're stressed out and that's all you can think about. And so just that open communication and your willingness to just be like, this has happened and here is a solution, or let's work out some solutions together. And like I said, I personally was able to watch you do that. So I know this is true for you. But I appreciate you bringing that to the forefront that like, hey, it's not really worth hiding it or like trying to sugarcoat it. Like, let's just deal with it head on and come up with a solution and like keep going. As you were saying that, I was thinking about how sometimes I've got something I don't really want to tell my husband. And I'm like, maybe if I text him before he gets home, he can like digest it. And then we can have a real conversation without a reaction. And I think this is a similar situation that you're talking about, is now we can deal with it instead of react to it. So I think that is really valuable insight. So I get asked several times a week how office managers and doctors can keep their teams motivated and ensure a positive work environment. And I just really love to hear your thoughts on this part.
This is a very, very loaded question. very loaded. And I say that because there are people that are just more transactional. And they come to work and they leave, and they come to work and they leave. And then there's others like myself or the doctors I work for, and they are motivated. Like, they're there. This is their life. This is their future. They believe in it. We used to say we bleed, you know, our brand, and it was real. And it was really hard to find that happy medium or bring people up to your level. And it's definitely challenging, and there's no perfect way to do it. And it's not gonna, but it's something you do every day. You truly have to motivate people every day in so many different ways. One thing that we did was have a morning huddle. I think they're very important, but you're kind of setting the tone right then and there. We would do, you know, obviously the stats of what's going to come in today, all the things. But then it was always like a game or like Jenga. We would play operation and the winner would get a free coffee. We've done like throw your shoes down the hallway and everyone has to run and find their own shoes on two separate teams. And it really just kind of sets the tone of how this day is going to be. And when then we always ended it with a quote. And normally a couple people would be the ones that have that quote. Or if someone heard it, they could say, I have one today. But you're kind of saying like, this is today's motto. This is what we're going to do today. You might've had a rough week and now we need to pick ourselves up, or it's Monday, we're going to tackle this, whatever that is. I think it's huge to always set the tone in the morning and then keep that motivation going. We definitely had the music going. So that was like, I know that's kind of little to say, but it really keeps people going. You would look over and you'd see somebody just tapping their foot or kind of singing along. And it kind of just sometimes, helps them kind of overcome whatever their mental game is doing, and you can pick them right back up. So I definitely think starting the day, and not all the time can you be at 110%, but you are expected to set that tone. If you come in negative, they're going to feed off that. So it was really just kind of right when you walk in.
I really appreciate that again, because I think that's a real honest way to come about what we're talking about here, because it is this, this word culture just keeps coming up over and over and over again with practices that I talk to. And they're like, how do we create culture? How do we create this positive environment? And I'm like, man, it starts at the top first, like you said. And I think it's embracing that we're all human and all going through our own human experiences outside of the practice, but trying really hard to leave some of that at the door and just like dig in. Huddle, I think, is a great way to do that first thing in the morning. I think the getting each other laughing and kind of playful is really helpful. You know, kind of shakes off the cobwebs from, you know, everything you dealt with that morning and just gets you in the right frame of mind. And I do hear a lot lately, I'd love your perspective on this as well, about incentives. You know, like we incentivize our team for reviews and hitting goals, and they get an incentive when they send a thank you letter. And I'm just starting to worry that these little things that should be part of your job are somehow getting lost in the mix of incentives. So I know that's kind of a tangent into this, but I'm just wondering, did you experience that? Did you guys use a lot of incentives to help with that positive culture, and maybe some thoughts on how that worked for you?
Yeah. That is definitely something that has molded over the years. It kind of started incentives like how many same day starts. And if you hit a number, everyone would get lunch or a bonus, a number. But then it kind of turned into, well, the treatment coordinators didn't hit it, so we didn't get it. And it really kind of, the pressure was put on an employee or a team member that no one else could benefit from that or change it or fix it. And so I think probably about 3 years ago, it transitioned into more of just fun or specific to your role. You have control over it. And it might be more of not like a daily, weekly, monthly. It was more quarterly based. You had time to kind of see your progress and go financial. They were more like delinquency rate, getting it below here, you'd get a percentage. Or if you could fill the schedule, like no shows, being able to reschedule them. So the front desk had complete control over that. And it wasn't always a gift card. It could have been seriously just bringing in a smoothie. Like, wow, last week you guys did awesome. But again, I think that's going to be specific to an office, but I do agree with you that there's going to be things that are kind of expected, or, it kind of just gets stagnant. So you just kind of, we would change it up a lot. We even had just like a parking spot for employee of the month, just random things. It didn't cost money, but it was fun. And you had front row and just little things like that.
I think those surprise and delight things to me is more motivating than, you know, you get a $5 gift card if you send a thank you card. Like, those are just things I just feel like if you're hiring the right people, those are things that those people are going to want to do because it's like a feel good part of your job. You know, it's building the brand. Like, you care about the practice more than just on a paycheck level. And I know it's hard to find those people. And like I said, I know we're human. We all just have a lot going on outside of the practice. But I think you've got to find the people that care just a little bit more deeply than, what am I going to get out of this? It's, you know, it's got to be, how am I supporting the practice? So, I think partly hiring, partly incentivizing, partly motivating, it's all just kind of intertwined. But I do think you could let incentives absolutely destroy your practice by just having, like, they're diluting everything else you're doing because it's always transactional instead of coming from your heart. So, we like to get questions or comments from our listeners and from our people in practice clients about our topic. So let's listen to our first question.
The discussion of uniforms and what to wear in the office seems to come up every 6 months, and I feel like we are in a battle every time with the team over what is appropriate. Any insights into what worked for you?
The ever-ending uniform question, right? I think it has been a topic of discussion any office I've ever been at. And to be honest, I've been there. I've been through the struggles for the people at their practice that are fighting for one and they don't feel like their voice are heard. I think a lot of it is just going to be, what is your brand and what is your office? And what are you trying to portray to your customers? For me, we started in, you know, scrubs, business professional on the complete opposite sides of, you know, the clinic versus administrative. And then it transitioned into those stuffy branded dresses, slacks, sweaters. And you could tell when we transitioned into that, people's body language changed and their behavior, just the way they felt, you could tell it really was like a topic that they focused on. And I know that the idea is to look clean and professional, and I'm not trying to downplay that, but we ended up going to a conference, and the team there when we walked in was wearing literally like what I'm wearing, like clothes like this. And they had the music going. They just looked happy and fun and energetic. And the clinic, the girls were wearing, well, the team themselves were wearing scrub pants. They were wearing branded t-shirts, and they could wear their scrub jackets over top. And you kind of just looked at them and everyone was smiling. And I'm sure the show was on, right? But we ended up coming back and we incorporated a new dress code that was a very casual look. And some of that, there might be some hypocrites that go against that. But to be honest with you, we're playing to what our brand was. We were new, we were modern, we were hip. We wanted to have cutting edge technology. Our customers, not everyone in ortho is a child, but majority are children. You know, it can be a little intimidating coming in and seeing everybody in strict uniforms. The minute we would come in and you'd have matching like Air Force Ones with one of the kids, they would be, they just connected. You kind of just looked more welcoming to them. And then there was kind of the coin toss of the parents. Now, again, parents right now of some of the children are millennials and trying to remember what they look at it. And I think just changing that culture of, we're welcoming, we're here, we're just like you, we're wearing the same stuff, but I'm still a consultant. I'm still the expert. I can still help you. And let's get past my uniform. And I honestly think this is real. When you put on an outfit and you just feel good, you look good and you know it, it portrays into your behavior, whether you're at a wedding or a friend's house, whatever that looks like. But I think you could bring that same thing into work. When girls or guys felt good about themselves and they could look in the mirror and confidently say that, it translates into your work. And I truly believe it because we saw it. We saw it firsthand. And then we left because there's always the clinic. Well, they get to wear it, the clinic doesn't. And I get that. There are just certain job duties. That's just real. It happens. But the clinic was allowed to wear jeans on Fridays. And then again, we always had the shirts or long sleeve shirts, and we had sweatshirts, and every 6 months we got new ones. So there was always something new coming in and fun. And it was one of those things that we definitely saw their confidence level change with something so simple as their clothes, but it's real.
It is real. And again, I love you. I love your honesty and I love your energy. And I just love how you can put all of these thoughts together in this way, because in my mind, it really does come down to two things with uniforms. It's what fits the vibe of the office, right? If you have a super clinical office, super clinical doctor, if doctor's wearing a bow tie and slacks every day and the rest of the team is in jeans and t-shirts, it's going to feel like distractive. It's going to feel out of place. So you really do have to think about what do we want our practice to look like and feel like, and does it like fit the vibe of what we put out there? But I also think it does come down to what people are comfortable in. And I think you have to trust that if you know your stuff, if you know what you're talking about in the TC room, if you're a great assistant chairside, really the uniform is going to come so much secondary to, yes, first impressions are important, but like what's coming out of my mouth and my expertise and my knowledge and how I care for you is going to outweigh what color my shoes are. So I think sometimes we get stuck in the weeds of like, okay, so we're going to all pick Nikes and they're all going to be this color and you can all wear them. I think that's super cute, but does that fit your brand? And is everybody comfortable in what they've got on? You know, wearing heels and a suit jacket for some people is a power move. But if that doesn't, again, fit the office vibe, it makes zero sense there. Or if somebody's super uncomfortable in that outfit and that's what they're focusing on instead of their knowledge, it's just so distracting. So I see why it's this thing that keeps coming up over and over. And I just think offices want an answer that they can tell their team, like, this is what the consultants or the experts out there say. And I just don't think that it really exists. I think you need to know your brand, you need to know your team, and then you need to listen to what your team's telling you and what, like you did, what their body language is saying. You know, you probably spent a ton of money getting those branded uniforms and cardigans and things. And then to see that just be something that brought the office down, and to recognize that and pivot from that, that's the sign of a good office manager. Talk to the team. What is this feeling like? Let's talk about this instead of ignoring it and acting like, well, this is just what we were told to do and we're going to do it. So again, your insights are just perfect. All right, let's listen to our next question.
As an office manager, I think one of my biggest challenges is managing everything that's on my plate at one time. Between overseeing the team, the doctor, and the flow of the office and the patient experience, I feel like I'm always getting pulled in several different directions. Any advice on how to better manage my time?
The holy question, right? That is, if you were to look up a good office manager description, I think that's what it is. And I think understanding the job description is that. It's being pulled in a million ways and being able to hold yourself up to the standard you want everybody else. And when you can master that, I think that's when you hit, you know, a great office manager. You're understanding you're always going to be pulled. The doctor's always going to need something. The team's always going to need you. There's always going to be an upset patient or parent, whatever that looks like. And I think when you embrace that, and then you say, this is my niche, this is what I can do, this is how I help, I think that's when you can take it to the next level. To really fine tune little details of how you get there, I live by a checklist. I had a daily checklist, and it's like everything you got to get done, right? Whether it's schedules or payroll, or it's this report, it's that, and the marketing, whatever that is, you put it all out there. So when, not if, when the fire happens, you need to put it out, you can easily come back to that checklist. Or this is going to have to wait until tomorrow. Something in the office is taking precedence. They need me. So it's kind of like if no one were asking me something, I would actually feel like I wasn't doing my job. I would be weird. Like, what is going on? And I do think that that is just knowing that's your job and that's your skill. And like I said, embrace it. And be able to do all of those things and know your list might have to wait. You might have to put an extra half an hour, but that's why you are the office manager. And that's why they believe in you.
See, and this is exactly why I wasn't ever an office manager, is because of this one. This perfect point is I tend to run pretty high anxiety. And I think the unknown and just like embracing the chaos of an office manager's job, you have to hire the person that can do that, right? You have to hire the person who can be like, my hair's on fire and nobody knows, right? Because when my hair's on fire, everybody knows that my hair is on fire. So that's why I don't thrive in that environment. But I have worked with a lot of office managers, and what I have seen over and over is really similar to what you're talking about. I see that people work in a block schedule where, you know, you look at your day and you say, these are the non-negotiables. I have a meeting at 1 o'clock. I have to meet with this patient at 2 o'clock. Those are the things that are like highlighted, blocked out, right? And then you have your have to get done today list. And then you have the list that sits to the side of that, that you always eventually hope to get to. And sometimes you have to take those eventual items and move them into your block and be like, I have to make time for this today. It's a must do today. But that's usually the way that I've seen it work, you know, the best for office managers. It's the scheduled things. It's the have to get done today's. And then it's my eventuals that have to get usually moved into a must get done today slot eventually. And that seems to work pretty good to manage some of the chaos. But I think then they have to have your personality where they say, bring it, let's go. Like, we've got this. Like, what else do you have for me today? Let's do it and then let's move on from it. So, yeah, I think, again, that insight is really, really helpful. So thank you. So can you share an example of a creative solution that you implemented to improve efficiency or maybe patient satisfaction or something that, you know, you and the team came up with together that you implemented and saw it, you know, really work well?
I think that you can improve stuff for, like you said, patient efficiency or the schedule or whatever that looks like. But probably one of the most impactful things that we did was cross-train. And for many reasons, like I commented earlier about people not being there, not being able to come in that day or calling in or just being out for maternity leave or vacation. I think cross-training is huge. We went plenty of times where someone, a machine was down, whatever that was, that people worked through lunch and you're just kind of like, well, I get my lunch, you don't, or we're just not going to be able to do that. And you have to tell a patient, we can't do something. We said we could. And it kind of was one of those, again, I came in as a treatment coordinator. So when they would not be there, I could fill in. When we were behind, I filled in. And then we got to a point where we trained the front desk, simple sterilization. The clinic is behind. Go in and spend 5 minutes when you've got a few minutes at the end of the day or right before lunch. Same thing with the clinic. We taught all of them how to answer the phones. And it was very simple. But if you're walking by and both are on the phone and there's somebody that needs checked out, you can't just walk by and wave. Like, what does that look like? The patient might wonder, like, can they help me? What can they do there? So we taught everyone just how to put people on hold, how to do this simple like intro of welcome to, my name is, how can I help you? If you listen for that first question, then you can say, put them on hold. But it was always, you know, you might get someone to pick them up, then just put them on hold. And they might just be out front looking for directions. They might just need rubber bands. So it was listening to that question and being able to try to just maybe put them on hold for financial, put them on hold for the lab, put them on hold for the doctor. And that was something where it then had this divide between the clinic and the front. And we all of a sudden were becoming a team. You had this less like, well, we're out for lunch, but you're not because you're running behind. We then had like, we all come together, we all leave together because everyone knew a little bit of how to do someone's job and you don't need to master it. But it was very much something that kind of brought the team together and patients couldn't see. Patients didn't know if this machine was broke, so we had to do a quick turn. They didn't know the doctor stepped out and we need to adjust this real quick before he comes back in the parking lot. It was uploading an x-ray. It's anything of the sort you can list, but having more than one person that can help, it was game changer right there.
So my answer to like 90% of the questions I get every day is, have you tried cross-training? because I think you're exactly right. And here's the other piece to that. I was actually speaking with a team member on, it was either the last episode of the podcast or the one right before, and she's a clinical team member. And she said something that this is exactly why cross-training is important on so many levels. But she said she loved being able to share with other people when she mastered something. So there's something really empowering as humans when we feel like, oh, I've got this down, and you can be the one that gets to teach somebody else how to do it. I think that's a big part of maybe why we're even here on this spinning little dot of an earth, is that we get to be like, we learned a lesson and then we get to share that experience with somebody else. And I think it's really empowering to the person who gets to share. I think it's really helpful to the whole team, like you said, to know how to, everybody knows how to at least answer the phone and listen and put somebody on hold and be like, I'm going to get you to the perfect person to help you with that, right? Like, it's putting that confidence in your team, in yourself. The patients feel that confidence then when they come in. So I think if you could implement anything in a practice as a creative solution to multiple problems, I think that cross-training is one of the best. Another thing I saw, the office I worked in the longest, we had an office manager who was just watched us struggle with our doctor flow and our schedule so much that she finally advocated to bring in a consultant who specialized in helping with the schedule. And she literally sat in the office. I can't even remember her name. She was great. I wish I could remember so I could pass that along. But she sat in the office for a day, watched the flow, how it existed at the time. And then she went into the schedule and told us, like, we're going to put this here and this there, and this is why. So it wasn't like she came in and overhauled the schedule and we all just had to like deal with it. It was like, this is the why. She asked us questions. We all had a little bit of input. And then by the time it was all said and done, our schedule just flowed so beautifully. And that was one of those creative solutions where I was like, yeah, I know it cost money to bring her in, but the stress that it alleviated from the team and the doctor was worth every single penny. So cross-training, finding those things that are maybe not going great, not working well. And just like you were saying earlier, in finding a solution to that problem, I think those are the keys to the secret sauce to making your office kind of happy.
We too used a consultant for scheduling, and you don't realize when you break it down how long the doctor's at the chair versus not. And when you start to look at doctor time, not how long the appointment takes, that definitely will alter everything. Because we had it to where he needed to be in four places all at once, and that didn't make sense. But we didn't think about it like that. I'm a huge advocate for consulting for that.
Yes, I completely support that as well. So how did you collaborate with the orthodontist and other team members to ensure smooth operations within the practice? What was your kind of secret ingredient to making things run well?
I think meetings are important. I definitely think scheduled meetings are important, and then following up with those meetings. I know you'd have some people that just thought a meeting was free lunch, and I get it. But it's truly that time to get everyone on board, ask the questions, but then having a secondary one, a quick follow-up of this is going well, or now that we've done it, what can you see? Because not any system you implement is going to be right the first time. So I think continuously having those and blocking them out on your schedule is huge. And I know for a doctor, taking away an hour long is losing production. Do it over lunch. It's worth paying for their lunch. Having those set meetings was something that we planned out. You'd build it. What were we doing? What do we need to do? And getting people's feedback, I think, is huge. And then just circling back to it. Because if you don't and you think it's going okay, but you don't hear the mumbles, then you're not really making things better. So I think one thing we did was we really got away from meetings at first when I first started. And then it was scheduled. There was quarterly, there was monthly. We were always had an opportunity for somebody to bring up an issue that we could try to work through. And there's always the one-offs, but as a whole, are we seeing this? Are we missing this? So I think that was something good or bad. Please schedule the meetings. Reschedule if you can't make them. But it definitely made everyone feel like they weren't in the dark, you know, the office manager and the doctor talk, and then they just implement stuff. They don't ask us. Here's what we're going to do. What's your guys' thoughts? Here's the why. And then coming back and really caring about that. So I think just being open and honest of what's to come. And then again, like I said, just always coming back and seeing how's it going.
Yes. It would have been my number one answer as well to that same question. I think it's the meetings. And it's not just the meetings of everybody together, which I do know are valuable and important, but then those subgroups. So if you've got a team that's kind of leading the marketing and maybe that shifts from time to time, that subgroup has a chance to meet and really collaborate and talk and then bring their thoughts and ideas back to that group meeting. And I think it's a matter of, I mean, as mundane as it sounds, like, what did we talk about last meeting? Let's just review how that's going now and kind of do a little temperature check and just make sure that, you know, things are, you know, we implemented this thing. Is it working? Because like you said, the same things aren't going to work well for each practice. And so we've got to try these things and then be like, is this working for us? How can we tweak it so it fits us? Because again, there's no cookie cutter anything. So, and I just think the meetings, though, in my opinion, they have to be collaborative and they have to be open discussion. I think if you go into those meetings where it's just the doctor and the office manager talking the whole time and nobody else has a say, some people are too scared to speak up because the last meeting that person got like, no, we're not going to talk about that, you know, like kind of shot down. I think, again, it's that top down mentality where like, you've got to just be like, here at the top, you know, we're here to make sure that everybody else has a good day and to manage these things. And I want to hear what you have to say, but then I expect you to hear what I have to say back. Like that collaboration and discussion and open communication and making sure that everybody on the team maybe has a role in that meeting. So everybody has something to say, because I've been in those meetings, like I said, where it's one person talk the whole time and you, like, I was doodling on my, I don't even know what they were talking about half the time, to be honest, because it just like became like, you know, droning. I don't know. I think our brains just need to hear like different perspectives and different thoughts and different tones of voice sometimes to like snap us back into the moment. You know, after 30 minutes, let everybody get up and get a drink of water so you kind of move a little bit, or some, like, you have to really watch your team, listen to your team, and then have that open communication. But I completely agree that those scheduled meetings are incredibly valuable to making sure that things are running smooth and that we're talking about the things that aren't running smooth. Like, it's the elephant in the room when everybody knows that there's a problem, but nobody wants to talk about it. And, you know, it's like, it's really healthy, I think, sometimes to be like, hey, this thing sucks. How are we going to fix it? Like, let's all talk about a solution to this. So I think those meetings are a good place to do that. So love that thought. So my last question is, what advice would you give to a new office manager just starting in an orthodontic practice?
So listen to this podcast. No, there's no like rule book, right? There's books out there to help you, but they're never going to be specific to your practice at all. You do kind of just take everything and you have to tailor it to your practice. But one thing that I would truly, truly advise is know your team, know your family. You don't become an office manager that's the best because you got production high and no one called in. You get it when they know you're gone. They feel it when you're gone, whether you're 2 hours going to be behind because you're at the dentist, or there's a piece of you that's missing when you're not there. And I truly think you have to sit each of them down. You've got to understand them. You've got to know their families. You have to learn their love language. It's not going to be yours all the time. I would constantly follow up with people. I check in. Hey, how are you? If they leave, I'm like, hey, you know, is everything okay? I didn't have to go out and have drinks and go to their weddings. That's not what I'm getting at. But knowing them on a deeper level can let that guard down. And I think they'll be more honest with you, whether they're thinking about quitting, they've got personal issues. They know they can come to you and tell you that, versus if I say something, I'm going to get wrote up, or they'll go to the doctor and I'll get fired. And I really just tried to just be there for them. I tried to understand and know, learn them. Not all of them want to be, you know, just sat down at a review and told the good and the bad. Some people need positive affirmation like daily, and that's okay. Know that, learn that, and do that. Walk by, you know what? You did great last week. I saw that hard patient. That was so awesome. It's the things that they don't expect, but you notice. And I just think you have to be aware that is your family. They're not your employees. Everybody there has a role. And one of yours is just to know where they're at and how to help them. And you could not know ortho and still be a great office manager. You really, really could. And I think the key is to just be in the trenches with them. Be willing to stay, be willing to let them cry to you, be willing to just listen. And even if you don't give advice, I do think that's probably something that people told me I was great at, and I don't ever feel like I'll be good enough, but it's the things of when you're gone that they realize they had. And I do think that that's very important, and it will help keep things running smoothly.
As I'm hearing you talk about this, I'm picking up on the thing that I know you're great at is that I know you really care, right? I think that's where it really comes down to being a really good leader, is that you really care about your team. And I think you've embodied that the whole time that I've ever known you. I think that's why the team notices when you're not there, is because they know how much you support them and care for them. And that is, I don't know that that's something you can teach an office manager. I think it's something that you find the right person for the job because you know that they are a really caring, respectful person who just wants people to come and be able to be their best selves as well. So thank you for putting you out in the world because I think you're spectacular. And thank you for sharing these insights because I know somebody is going to benefit from hearing you say all of these things. So thank you very much. So I really hope that you enjoyed our conversation today as much as I did. Thank you for your time and for sharing your valuable insights, Tricia. You are a gem and very much appreciated.
You're welcome. Thank you guys so much. Seriously.
Yes. So our goal with this podcast is to give you truly tangible items that you can use in your day-to-day life at the office to elevate the voices of the people that actually work in an office and sit in the same chair that you sit in every single day. We'd love to hear from you about topic or guest recommendations, as well as questions or comments about the things that you're dealing with in your practice. Send us your anonymous questions or non-anonymous. You can put yourself out there. Send us your questions and stories to practice-talk.com. Please subscribe and share this episode with your friends and family that might find these conversations helpful and or interesting. And don't forget to listen to our original podcast called The Golden Age of Orthodontics, hosted by the founders of People in Practice, Dr. Leon Klempner and Amy Epstein. Until next time, thank you for joining us on Practice Talk, where your voice has value.
Thank you for listening to the Practice Talk podcast. Head over to practice-talk.com to ask us questions or tell us your stories. Until next time.